So before I begin, I just have to say that I love this series about being unashamed, and I think I say that about every series, but I really do love this one. I really do love all of them. That's really okay. Because I think it's an important thing to talk about, especially now. I think right now, the things we're talking about, it's a sobering look at reality, at the state of the church, at the state of Christians. And I think myself, I know it's causing me to look at myself, and I think it's causing us to look at ourselves and wonder, like, are we being the church as Christ has called us to be? Are we in the battle? Are we ready for the battle, right? Are we the church as God has called us to be? And when I talk about battles, I know it's easy to look at the viewpoint like it's us versus the world. And often it is. It feels like it's us versus the world. But the battles I'm talking about now are more important battles. The battles that we fight against ourselves, against our own flesh, against our own sin. Because I think it's often easier to fight the world than it is to fight our own flesh. It's easier to identify the enemy when it is the world, when it's external, than identify the enemy within ourselves. I know that no one wants to think for a second that we're fighting against God, right? I often don't like to think I'm fighting against God, but often we are without even knowing it. Often we're fighting against God and we're not even aware of it. This week, we're going to look at the Tower of Babel and the rebellion that took place there to determine, help us determine like our motivations. Like, are we fighting the will of God? Are we doing what God has called us to do? Are we being the church as Christ has called us to be the church? So to do this, let's open our Bibles to Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Oh, that's a misprint. It's actually 11 through 19. So buckle in. Is that something? Buckle in? Yeah. Okay, thank you. I'll stop drinking water, Janice. All right. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, "If as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other." So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Now, I'm just going to say what maybe some of us are thinking, and I know I thought this as a child when I was hearing the story. Like, at first glance, it doesn't really seem all that bad what they're doing, right? They're building a city. They're building a tower to reach the heavens. Like, they're working together, you know? It sounds like God's like, well, if they can do anything they set their mind to, let's break it up. And you're like, well, I mean, isn't that good that they're working together, right? I mean, they're just building a tall tower. Don't we do that now? I know when I was a kid and I heard the story, whenever you drive through the city and you see like a skyscraper, I'd be like, oh, they're building a Tower of Babel. God's gonna smite them. I just know he is. And I was wishing he would, but he didn't. So I'm just kidding. I wasn't that awful of a child. But in this verse, it says they wanted to do three things, okay? They want to make a tower that reaches the heavens. They want to make a name for themselves so that they will not be scattered over the whole earth. Okay, and I'm going to tackle these out of order, but first I want to start with the tower, because unfortunately nowadays when we talk about things that happen in the Bible, I have to first convince you that it actually happened, okay, and that there is historical evidence for this. Where was this tower? Okay, why was it built? What was their motivation? And there's actually several sources outside the Bible, and I'm not even going to get into all of them today, though they were incredibly interesting to me. But first let's talk about the physical tower itself. It was built in the plain of Shinar in present-day Babylon, which is actually Iraq, okay? And you can go to the picture of the plain of Shinar. This is the plain of Shinar. You can see Babylon down here. And many scholars believe that this is the type of structure that they built, okay? This structure is a ziggurat. And I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I don't care. In Ur, okay? And you can actually go to the next picture, all right? And this is ziggurat. This particular ziggurat is called Etemenanki. Okay, and it's located in the city of Babylon, where some believe that the Tower of Babel was built. And there are a few things I found interesting about this particular ziggurat. King Nebuchadnezzar claimed to have built this around 600 BC, but there's evidence that suggests it was built much earlier. Okay, in Nebuchadnezzar's own words, The tower, the eternal house, which I founded and built, I have completed its magnificence with silver, gold, other metals, stone, enameled bricks, fir, and pine. The first, which is the house of the earth's base, the most ancient monument of Babylon, I built and finished it. I have highly exalted its head with bricks covered with copper. We say for the other, that is, this edifice, the house of the seven lights of the earth, the most ancient monument of Borsippa. A former king built it. They reckon 42 ages, but he did not complete its head. Since a remote time, people had abandoned it without order expressing their words. Since that time, the earthquake and the thunder had dispersed the sun-dried clay. The bricks of the casing had been split, and the earth of the interior had been scattered in heaps. Merodach, the great god, excited my mind to repair this building. I did not change the site, nor did I take away the foundation. In a fortunate month, in an auspicious day, I undertook to build porticos around the crude brick masses and the casing of burnt bricks. I adapted the circuits. I put the inscription of my name in the keter of the portico. I set my hand to finish it and to exalt its head as it had been done in ancient days, so I exalted its summit. So here, he's suggesting that this structure that he built on top of had been there from ages past. Everyone knew about it. He kept the foundation as it was, okay, and that the bricks had been scattered from an earthquake, and so he set to repair it, and he just put a top on it, okay? So it suggests it'd been there, unfinished, long before him, and he even says that the king before him didn't finish it because they had abandoned it without order expressing their words. Another thing that's interesting about this type of structure, the ziggurat, is that this particular one, the interesting thing about it is that the foundation that they laid on top of is so big. This type of structure, it's like a big block and then a smaller block and then a smaller block. That's kind of the way they built things. And so if you came upon them as they were building this, the foundation and the bottom level is so large that you would anticipate that the building would be much taller than it actually ended up being. The top they put on it was so small, the way Nebuchadnezzar finished it even suggests that he's telling the truth and that this foundation is so large, meant for a very tall, big building, but it ended up being like this squat little structure, okay? So now we have a good picture of the tower in our heads. Let's look at why they would want to build it, okay? And this is actually going to come from the Antiquities of the Jews. There's a great historian named Josephus. He's Jewish. He's not a Christian. He did historical stuff that features the Romans as well as the Jews. And this is what he says in the Antiquities of the Jews. He writes that at first, after the flood, many were greatly afraid to move to the lower grounds on account of the flood and were loath to leave the high places. When they first came down into the plains, they settled in Shinar. It says, God commanded them to send colonies abroad for the thorough peopling of the earth, that they might not raise seditions amongst themselves, but might cultivate a great part of the earth and enjoy its fruits. But they did not obey God. Josephus goes on to say that when they flourished with a numerous youth, God admonished them again to send out colonies, but they, imagining the prosperity they enjoyed was not derived from the favor of God, but supposing that their own power was the proper cause of the plentiful condition they were in, did not obey him. They also suspected that they had been ordered to send out colonies that, being divided asunder, they might the more easily be oppressed. So they resolved to build a tower too high for the waters to reach. And it goes on to say in the works of Josephus that it was built of burnt brick, cemented together with mortar made of bitumen that it might not be liable to admit water. So they built this tall building out of bricks that it might not be liable to admit water. We can see that the reasons for building this tower were due to a growing distrust of God, a greater belief in their own power, and the belief that he might do something because they were not obeying him. They were not doing as he had asked. Their disobedience to the will of God is actually alluded to in verse 2 when it says, as people moved eastward. Okay, you see in Genesis 3, 23 and 24, it says this. So the Lord God banished him from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which he had been taken. After he drove the man out, he placed on the east side of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword flashing back and forth to guard the way to the tree of life. It says God placed an angel at the east gate, meaning they left out of the east gate and headed east. As they moved eastward, they were moving further and further away from the only place they knew to be a place of intimate encounter with God. In fact, in Jewish texts, when it says headed east, it usually infers heading away from God. Okay, so when other people read this, Jewish people said as people moved eastward, they would know this wasn't just directional information. This was saying they were moving away from God. Okay, they were getting further away from the place they had known to be the presence of God. And as they do that, they're getting further and further from the will of God. Okay, and they know the will of God because Josephus said that God had admonished them to send out colonies twice. But we know it from the Bible also. In Genesis 1, 28, it says this, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Fill the earth and subdue it. In the very beginning, God tells them to fill the earth. And in some versions, it actually says to scatter across the earth. He tells them that his intent for them is to spread out, to populate the whole earth, and to take care of the plants and animals. And he again says this in Genesis 9, 1 and 7, after the flood, when he says this, then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. And then in 7, he says, as for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it. Just in case we might be confused that he wasn't clear. Okay, he said it a ton of times. He says, my desire is for you to spread across the earth. So the people were united, but they were united against the purposes of God. Okay, this is like two kids and their mother and they're plotting to murder their mother. But do we want God to be like a mother who's like, they're working together. Just so proud of them. You know, they used to fight. Now they're working together. At least, oh, these are your plans to kill me? Oh my gosh, they're wonderful. They're so thought out. You know, when I sleep and everything, right? Like, this is not like when we read that and we think that God's the bad guy in that situation, like this is a rebellion. Okay? This is why they want to make the tower reach to the heavens, okay? Because in building this tower, they even state, so we won't be scattered. Almost saying, if we don't do something about God, if we don't do something about this, if we don't take action, his will be done. His will be done. And we have to do something to stop his will from being done. We have to overthrow him. We have to build a tower to reach him. We have to build a tower that will protect us if he tries to punish us for disobeying him. God has told them to scatter and fill the earth, okay? And I think in their statement, come let us, they feel that they're stronger together, right? They're stronger together than maybe even God. But we know what that feeling is like. We're stronger together. Like if we're gonna disobey, you know, it's easier to disobey as a group, right? If you ever have kids, multiple kids, you'll realize that they are, when they team up against you, they're worse. You know, I remember one time, my sisters and I, yes, correct. One time we found the spanking stick. And we took it outside and we had a campfire and I don't know where mom and dad were, but someone found the spanking stick and brought it outside and we were like, let's burn it. Probably wasn't my idea. But we put in the fire and I think we ran around it dancing. It was very Lord of the Flies-esque. Like we were just like, ha, 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 there's no order. You know what I mean? Like when we get together with a group, we feel like that there's power there, right? So these people, that's how they feel. When they say, come let us, let's do this. Let's try to stop the will of God for us. And lastly, it says they want to make a name for themselves. And I think this part is probably the easiest for us to understand, the easiest for us to identify with, right? Because names are important to us, right? Like last names are important to us, the passing on of names, right? It's important to us. It's a very natural desire for man. We each want to make a name for ourselves. We want the world to know our name, to know who we are. We want to be known and remembered. It's kind of an immortality if people remember us, remember things that we did, right? If we live on in the minds of people, if we live on in their memories, we want to leave a legacy. And even for those of us who don't reach that goal, we still want our name to be remembered. And this is evident in any cemetery you walk through. There's names. names and a little blurb of something they've done, because not only do we want people to remember our names, but something that we did, something that we are remembered for, right? Hundreds of names just scrawled out upon tombstones so that we're remembered. We want our names to be known and remembered. But is that what God made us for? Is that what God made us for? That our names could be known, that our names could be remembered. Is that really important? Is it really important? In many ways, as we do this, we build our own towers of Babel. We want to be higher than all the others, to be looked up to. We want to elevate ourselves. This is what these people were doing. They were physically trying to elevate themselves above God, to make their names greater than God's name. They were only concerned with themselves, with their own purposes, with their own plans. And this God was not going along with their purposes and their plans. And that's what they were concerned with. And so God, in verse 7, it says, "Let us confuse their language so they do not understand each other." But the literal interpretation is, "Let us confuse their language so they stop listening to each other." So they stop listening to each other because they are no longer listening to God and they're leading each other astray. And so God scatters them because God's will is going to be accomplished. He says, I'm going to do this and I want you to be a part of it and you can be a part of it. Just do this. But if you do not want to be a part of it, I'm still going to do it. You can be, but I don't need you. You can do what I told you, or I can do what I told you. And as Christians, we have to wonder, are we a part of what God is doing? In our everyday lives, are we a part of what God is doing, or have we dug in? Are we building our own towers of Babel? Are we concerned with our own purposes and our own plans? Are we buying into this culture of individualism and narcissism? See, God has given us the same directive to scatter. In Matthew 28, 18 through 20, it says this, "Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age.'" Our orders are to go into all the world, to go, to scatter, and to make disciples of all nations. But just like these people in ages past, we may have a distrust for God, a distrust in his plan for us. Maybe we don't believe him when he says he's with us always, when he says that we've been given authority, right? We're not entirely sure that his plans for us go along with our plans for us, right? I know that every morning that I wake up with Flynn, and it's just me and him, and we go out, and we wake up, and we're out there before mommy has come out, and that's not often, but it does happen in rare occasions, and we'll be out there, and Flynn will provide me with a list of options of things we can do, and we both know that every item on this list is something that mommy does not allow him to do in the morning when she's out here. So he'll start. He'll say, "Okay, Daddy, I have a list of options. This is what we can do." He said, "We can play Star Wars on a PlayStation," or, and as I begin to say no, he's like, oh, "I'm not done with the options. I'm not done with the options. If you don't want to play, I can play by myself on the iPad." And I go to say no. He's like, "I'm not done with the options." And then, or "if you don't want to go get the iPad, I could just play by myself on your phone right there." Right? It's getting easier and easier for you, Dad, right? And again, I say no, and then he's like on the floor and like, "Ah," and I'm like, "Daisy." But isn't that kind of what we do with God, right? We're just like, "Man, I love God. I want to serve God. God, man, I want to work for you. I want to go. These are the things that I'm willing to do." Okay, here's a good option for you. Okay, then this one, I'm less into it, God, but I'll do it. And this one, this is like last and least, God. But if you have me do that, I'll be semi-happy. But this one, we could really spread your name, right? I mean, we have our own plans and we give God these options. Like, we want God to bless our plans. We immediately make our own plans and we want God to bless them. Okay. When I was, I know every story I have concerns me being in a band, but the other ones I have are me working at a psych ward, and the majority of them are about poop, so I have to go back to the band. But I remember when I first felt the call to come down here and start a band and do music, like I wanted to do worship. I wanted to do worship in a church. I just loved worshiping God. It was like the best thing. And I know I'm saying that in past tense. I still love it. But I just loved doing it. So I moved down here. But the people I was around were Christians, but they'd been growing up in the church and they thought worship was stupid. So we did some music that wasn't worship, but we still, it was like allegorical stories, hoping to reveal God to people. And I would give my testimony. And it was a God thing. It was a good thing. But the longer we played, the more things we did. I'll be honest with you. We played a lot of churches. And I have to tell you that like the thing I hated the most was when someone asked us to do worship. Do those lame songs. Are you kidding me? We were like, everyone knows that worship bands are failed musicians, right? That became Christians later in their life. And I know everyone's like, but like, that's what I thought. It's not true, but that's the way I looked at it. And you know who the most annoying person was when we walked through the door? Youth pastors. They're annoying. They are. I am the exception. They're still annoying. You just feel like, who's that guy with the spiky blonde hair and the goatee that's like over the top excited about everything? Oh, it's the youth pastor. Like, it was just like, I'll be honest with you, it was the least. Playing worship and being a youth pastor, right? That was not God's plan for me. And I had no desire to do that. But I remember we were playing this festival, and it was a really good festival for us. People really liked us there. We did this really weird promotional stuff to get people to come to our shows. And one year we were like, we're just going to do one show, one big show, get everybody there. We had already talked to a bunch of labels that were coming to watch us. We'd promoted everyone, like you could just feel the energy about us like throughout the whole like site. And so there's tons of different circus tents where they're having these concerts, and we were in one of the bigger ones. And like, as we're getting ready to play, man, there's just people spilling out the sides. Thousands of people, like rows and rows outside, cannot get into the tent. And we're just like, yes, all of our work is about to pay off, da-da-da. And then all of a sudden, the power goes out to one stage. You'll never believe which one. Ours. Every other stage was run by a generator, except ours, because it was big, so it needed to run by city power. And so our power went out, and it was out for hours. And we played later in the evening, like 6 hours later, and a bunch of people came, but it was not what it was, because we could not go and be like, hey, you know how we've been promoting that one time all week? It's changed. Right, so I remember people were still in the tent before it was all over. People were still in the tent waiting for us to play. And I was just out sitting on a hill behind the stage looking at the water. And I was just like, what are you doing? What are you doing, man? I know this is you. What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? We've worked and we're doing this for you. And we've been faithful, man. I see all these other Christians and they're just fakes. And here we are serving you and you're going to let this happen? Seriously? You're going to do this? And so we ended up stopping. We ended up like just kind of, I think after that, we still intended to go on and we just kind of delayed. But like, we were just so like, I don't know, frustrated with it and tired and weary. And I was just like, man, I feel like, why are you putting these roadblocks up? And so I remember there came a point where Daisy was working here as an assistant, and I didn't volunteer here at youth yet, but they needed a worship band, and they had put Daisy in charge of finding the worship band, but there wasn't really any money to get a worship band, to get a band to come stay at this place all week and play every night. And she was like, I got to find a worship band. And I just kept being like, well, it ain't us. It ain't us. Get that? It wasn't even in my mind at first till it got desperate and I was like, my body was having a natural reaction to playing worship at a youth camp. I was like, we are not doing that. No way. And as we got closer and closer, we were like, oh, we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to play worship at a youth camp. And what's funny is now we play worship at a youth camp every year, and it's my favorite thing of the year. Like, and actually, after we played that, we were like, man, it just like reminded me that I loved worship. And I was like, we were like, why are we doing anything but this? Why are we doing anything but this? Like, I saw it like it was the least. I saw it because it wasn't viewed as successful, but like, we're in the presence of God and we're praising him and we're with his people and our hands are raised and we're singing to God. And this is it. This is what it's about. But it's not how I saw it. I saw leading worship and being a youth pastor as the least. And that was God's plan for me. But no, I'm telling you, but I'm happy. I love youth. And it's funny how God works. It's funny how God works. I was just thinking today as I got ready, like how happy I am in what I do and how happy I am in my relationships with the kids and how much I love worshiping with them. And we never know God's plan for us. But we do know that he asks us to be the least, to be the servant of all, to wash others' feet. He tells us not to be like the world. He says the greatest among you should be like the youngest and the one who rules like the one who serves. As they're at the table, the disciples were fighting and being like, God, Jesus, who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to be the greatest? And I see this all the time because in our staff meetings, Janice is always like, Pastor Corky, who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to be great? And everyone else is like, Janice, that's not what it's about. And I'll wash her feet once a week just to remind her what it's about. I'm like, come on down. I said that in the last service. And afterwards, she said, actually, Pastor Corky sent me a text. And look, it says, you are the best. So I was like, I'll wash your feet right now if you need some humbling. But that's what Jesus said. He said, listen, guys, you don't get it. You do not get it. That's not what it's about. He says, for who is greater? The one who's at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who's at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. I, the Son of God, am among you as the one who serves. I see this acted out every Wednesday night. We have a bunch of people that come and help, and we have a bunch of people that help on Sunday night too, but we have some ladies that come every Wednesday night, and they help set out dinner, they do the dishes, and they do the trash, and it suddenly hit me one Sunday, as Nancy Johnson and Debbie Davis, that they're elders in our church. And I was like, oh, they're elders. And they're here at youth, feeding the kids, doing the dishes, and taking out the trash. And if they weren't doing it, I would just let the dishes pile up because that's beneath me. But they do it. I'm just kidding, but they do it. They make themselves at least. And I told them the other day, I was just like, I'm so impressed by you. I never really registered that you guys don't need to be here, that in the eyes of the church, you're very important, you're at the top, and here you are doing the things that I don't want to do. And you do it with a glad heart. And that's what God has called us to do. What God asks of us doesn't bring us the glory that we're seeking. It doesn't. It doesn't make us feel important. There's no earthly honor in it, but it does place us in the will of God. And being in the will of God, you will never experience such peace and such joy as being inside the will of God. We're talking about being unashamed for a reason. It doesn't just mean being bold and being strong. We cannot be stopped by the fear of shame, right? We cannot be stopped by the fear of shame, the shame of being unimportant, the shame of being overlooked, the shame of holding no power whatsoever, of having no say-so whatsoever, the shame of being looked down on as a fool for your beliefs, the shame of being the least, the shame of being the servant, the servant. That's what Jesus has called us to be. This is God's plan for us. It's God's plan. Do we trust him? Do we trust him? Because that's where it all started with them. Their plans against God started with not trusting him. Do we trust him? It says in Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Do we believe this? Do we believe it? Do we trust him? Do we trust him? God's got a plan for everyone here. It might not be what you want to do. It might not bring any earthly glory or honor or fame or respect. In fact, you might lose a lot of respect doing what God has called you to do, to be the least. But if it's God's will, if it's the will of God, I can promise you this, it's good. It's good. We have to decide if we as Christians trust God's word. Do we trust God's word? Do we trust God's plan? Do we trust God himself? Do we trust him? We have to know that he is good, that his plans are for our good, They're for your good. His plans are for good. Will we live in fear, scared of going into all the world because we can be picked off easier, because it isn't safe, because we're all alone at work or at school? Will we be scared of feeling that shame, or will we do what he's called us to do and be who he has called us to be? Will we scatter and be servants of all? Because I tell you, in this world where everyone is just vying to be seen, to be important, to be loved on all social media, like getting likes, and everyone wants to have their say. Everyone wants to feel important. I'm telling you, by the time I get youth in seventh grade, the world that they live in, the culture is so about this self-importance that you almost have to unwork what already has been put in, and not by their parents, but by their peers, by the pressures of everyday life to be seen, to be important, to not be overlooked, right? Right? I mean, honestly, when someone goes somewhere, the thing that breaks our heart the most, if we send our kids to school, we send our kids to youth, we send our kids to church, and they come back and say, "No one talked to me," then we will never make them go again, because our hurt for them being overlooked, because it's important, right? It's important that their name is known. But that's not who God has called us to be. Imagine what this world would look like. Like, we tell people all the time, like, "Oh, Jesus saved my life. Oh, and we're supposed to be different. We're set apart," right? We're set apart. We're different. But do we look all that different? Sometimes when we're fighting or arguing with the world about our beliefs and their beliefs, we just look like the other side of the same coin. We are exactly the same, just mad about different things, and we are filled with the same hate and the same anger. But if we went out as servants of all, how different would we look? That's the thing that changes people's life. That's the thing that seems supernatural. That's the thing that says, what makes that person love me when I hate them? What makes that person serve me when I make their life miserable? What makes that person kind to me when I bully them? It's like, that's Jesus. That's what Jesus has called us to do, to be the least, to be the servant. If we want to see this world changed, if we want to stand out, if we want to reverse the trajectory that the world is going to, all we have to do is do what Jesus said. Go into all the world and be the least. Love those who hate you. Love those who persecute you. If they hit you on one side of the face, give them the other, right? That's what he says. And that's what we as Christians, we don't do. But man, oh man, I'm telling you, if we did it, all of a sudden, we would see the power of Jesus. We would see him working through us. We would see results. We would see the world change, because what we are doing doesn't make sense at all in the way that they see things. And we can't see things the same way. We are to go and we are to be the least. And if you do that, I promise you, you will see God move. You will be in his will. You will see how good he is. You will see his blessing. You will see his favor. You would experience his power and his authority, and all the people you've been praying for, and even all the people you hate, you will see their lives changed. I got nothing else. Let's stand and sing.